Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. This is episode 8, I believe. I think it is. Yeah, my name's Josh, and I'm here with Adam and Luke, and we are excited to be back and excited you are with us here today. We had a great day yesterday. Adam preached a great sermon, and so we're excited to get into that here in just a little bit. But guys, first of all, how you feeling today on a scale of 1 to 10?
Let's give it an 8.5.
All right.
8.5. I'm at the age to where I can hurt myself just like rolling over in bed. And so I strained a muscle in my back the other day just doing
something. So you're still at an 8.5 after doing that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, man. That just means, you know, life is good.
Life is good if that's what you've got to complain about.
Yeah.
All things considered, I'm at a 10, but I'm sluggish this morning. It was a slow morning for me today.
Yeah.
You know, one of the college professors where we went to college, you'd ask him how he's doing, and he would always say, saved, sanctified, and on my way to heaven.
Yep.
It's a good day. So
and full of the Holy Spirit.
Too. Well, like, yeah, yeah.
It was
that's
a
it,
whole
that's
thing.
It. Yeah.
Was that Woody?
It was. Yeah. What a great name.
I never had him as one of the professors, but he did sub for like one of the philosophy classes that I was taking one time.
Yeah, man. He gave all kinds of notes, killed a tree, I think, per class.
Well, and he also always just gave pretty much A's. If you couldn't get an A
in
one of his classes, you just needed to go home and college isn't for you.
There you go.
Yeah. We did, you know, all the memory work with Woody, and it would be to write the stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would do it, and you would get it back, and it would just be all red. And you'd be like, oh, man. And you'd get like an A. And he'd be like, oh, you were really close. It's like, well, there's an awful lot of red ink to be
you
close.
It was in the Bible.
Yeah. Good try. Good effort.
Man. Hey, really great sermon yesterday and time together as we talked. Just wrapping up, you are here. All about surrendered living and service and giving up of our life. And so I thought it kind of would be fun before we jumped into that content to just ask, you know, in your own lives, as you've had to serve, what are some of the dirtiest jobs you've ever had to do, cleaning up or whatever it may be? So, Luke, start us out.
Dirty jobs. I usually don't seek them out. So,
well, sure.
No one does. But
unless you're
the first one on a show, yeah.
The first one that came to mind, this was the summer of, 2017. I was interning as a youth ministry intern at a church just northwest of Austin, Texas. And we went to Brownsville, Texas, which is like close to the mm-hmm. border, to do a little mission trip to help with some really cool organizations. And the guy who was leading us broke me and a couple of other guys into a group and took us to a secluded area on their campus. And it was this small little shed. And when he opened the shed, I kid you not when I say thousands of cockroaches.
Ooh, love it.
Thousands. All disappeared into the corners of the shed. And so
mm-hmm.
he laughed whenever that happened. We jumped back. And he said, okay, your job this week is to clean this shed.
Oh, wow.
you mean the one where I just saw 1,000 of cockroaches go hide in all of the corners behind all of the stuff? He's like, oh, yeah. I was like, all right. And so we spent, it took us about 3 full days to kind of clean up everything out of there. And it was so funny. One of the teenagers, he found like a bag on like day 2 or something like that. And that bag was where a lot of the cockroaches were. And so he like went to pick up the bag and then just like everywhere, tons of them. And like they like were crawling on him and got a ball in his back and all that sort of stuff. It was a nasty job, but like whenever you just think about a cockroach, it's just like, ugh.
Yeah,
you know, you just immediately.
I always imagine Will Smith from Men in Black.
Men in Black, there you go.
You know, and all that.
That was a great movie and a disgusting movie because cockroaches just are that gross. That's the first one that comes to my mind. That dirtiest job. That was a gross shed. So nasty.
Yeah, just light a match and
yeah,
let it go, baby.
And the crazy thing is too, like we kept like saying, he was like, I want it to be organized and we're going to like get rid of some stuff. And so we would make piles and then, you know, he would come back and he's like, no, we're going to keep that. We're going to keep that. We're going to keep that. And then everything that we took out of the shed ended up going back in anyway. Yeah. And I hope, you know, it's, you know, that's been 5 years. I hope that it is spick and span as it is when we left it.
Yeah, it's not.
It's probably not, but that's okay. Another youth group can go clean it up now.
Yeah, I think Jesus said about that, right? If you clean out a space, all the demons just go right back in it. If you don't fill it
like
with something
else. Like seven times as many.
7 times as many cockroaches.
There you go.
Gross. Adam, you got a story?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of them that comes to mind for me is back in 2011, whenever the tornado went through Joplin, Missouri, we took teams out there a couple of times, and we did some cleanup work. And one of the houses that we were cleaning up, just a lot of just trash and junk and dead cats and all kinds of things. And that was pretty gross.
Yeah.
Pretty gnarly. And then the only other thing I think about is I had a summer where, well, I actually had a couple summers, you know, working for the school district there in Carthage doing grunt work. And it's not like dirty kind of stuff, but doing demo work. They were doing a lot of remodeling at the schools, and so getting to demo rooms and hang sheetrock and all the sanding. It's like I said, it's not like a it's not like a disgusting job, but it's just like you walk out and you're just covered in
like sheetrock dust.
Sheetrock dust, probably asbestos.
Yeah.
Because that building was built so
at that time, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the ones that kind of come to mind for me.
For me, my mind went back to pushing carts at Sam's. And so people are just nasty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll leave used baby diapers just in the cart for me to clean up, or they're, don't make this up, the used 20-ounce bottle completely full of chewing tobacco spit.
Nice.
Yeah. Oof. And or taking out the trash. Or, man, I was thinking about it recently, too. My daughter told me before she went to bed a few months ago. She's like, Daddy, I don't feel very well. So I thought, oh, you know, let's just, hopefully, you know, you'll feel better after you get some sleep. Well, middle of the night, she had gotten up. She's on the top bunk, so she wasn't able to get out of bed completely. So she made it, luckily made it out of bed, but didn't make it past the rug. So, I mean, it was all a throw up, puke was all over the floor. And middle of the night, I couldn't see, so I'm like stepping in it.
Oh.
My knee was in it at one point.
No.
Like, this is ridiculous. I don't do well with throw up either. I think I took a shower in the middle of the night after that one.
Yeah.
I would hope.
No time of day that a shower is not warranted after that.
Yeah. So
crawl back in bed next to Sasha. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, baby, I love you.
Oh, man. Dirty jobs. We all got to do them at some point. You know, we all have to clean up. We all have to serve. And there's no really way around it. They teach us a lot about kind of who we are, really. So I follow up question, a little more serious, would be: all of us have led and been a part of mission trips, service trips. So for you, what has been a most impactful moment as you've been serving or seen others serving? So Luke, you want to start with that one?
Sure. I think the first story that comes to mind anytime I get asked this question is a story that I would say not just impacted my way of thinking as far as like living on mission and serving goes, but really just impacted my way of thinking in general. And summer of 2019, it was my first summer here on full-time staff. You had organized a mission trip for the teenagers to go to Guatemala with Casas Por Cristo, build a house. I got to go on that. And if you've never been to Guatemala, I was not expecting this. It is a beautiful area. Like I was not
very
expecting expecting the region to look the way that it looked, but it's like very mountainous, very green, just very steep mountains, deep valleys. It was breathtaking to look at. And so you load up your group into that bus, you start driving through the country, and you're looking out the window, and I've always kind of just had my breath taken away by nature. And so I was just soaking that in, enjoying that, thinking, oh my goodness, God, you are so creative. You are so good to bless us with views like this. And what I found myself doing was looking over the heads of people who were created in God's image. Mm. And whenever I looked at them, I did not feel the same move to worship as I did whenever I saw the beautiful scenery around me. And that, like, that was just a Holy Spirit gut punch conviction that kind of changed, yep, changed the way that I started to see people. Because you go all the way back to the creation story. God makes light and he creates the sky and the land and the sea and the birds and the fish and the sun and the moon and the stars and all of the animals. Like, he creates all of that. And he's just like, yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just good. But then he gets to last part of day six and it's like, I'm going to make mankind in my image. And when he's done with that, he's like, man, that's very, very good.
Yeah.
And I found myself, just through that trip, it was revealed to me that whenever I see people, it does not move me to worship like it should. Mm. Because they are way more beautiful than anything else I could ever see. And so when you start to see people like that, the way that you kind of shift your attitude of service, mm-hmm, kind of, mm-hmm, it's huge and impactful. And so whenever you see the people as, you know, any people, like, in Guatemala, your next door neighbor, whenever you see them as a beautiful child of God created in his image, who is very good, with more value than the Rocky Mountains, with more value than, yeah, the Grand Canyon, with more value than Yellowstone National Park, whenever you see them that way, man, there's not much that you won't do for them. And that was a huge moment for me in my faith.
Wow. That's good. That's good. Adam, any service trips that stick out?
Yeah, I remember Galilee. This was probably back in 2000 and, oh, wow, two or three.
Yeah.
Went to.
You want me to tell you how old I was in 2002?
No, I don't need you to do that. But went to Venezuela on a trip with CIY. And it was just it was an incredible trip. But the one thing that I'll always remember is just going into one of their prisons. Mm-hmm. And we held, you know, worship services and did that kind of stuff. But it was just crazy, 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 crazy stuff. And like, I remember whenever we were on the bus getting ready to go in there, our guide was just like, hey, you know, just so you guys are aware, prisons here are different than what they are in the States. You know, I don't know if you've ever, you know, been in a prison in the States, and like, it's just a little bit different here. So don't be surprised if while you're in there, you know, you see prisoners walking around with knives, handguns, hand grenades. And we all kind of like went, wait, what did you just say?
Is this on the release form?
Yeah. It's like, okay, knives, handguns. Okay. I can get my brain a little bit around that, but like grenades? And they're like, yeah, grenades. And so, you know,
it doesn't sound like prison.
Yeah. But so it was just like, oh my gosh, what are we walking into? And like, literally whenever we were walking out, like, we followed a trail of blood because somebody had been shanked, you know, while we were in there. And, The crazy thing about it was, so they said, whenever you go in here, you're going to be able to tell very easily who the Christians are and who the non-Christians are. And for them, the marker was Christians in prison wore shirts and ties, and the non-Christians, you know, didn't. And so I remember, and I can't remember who it was that was speaking, but just the great reminder that was shared to those prisoners to me, that really just resonated with me, is like, you know, hey, y'all identify yourself by what you're wearing, but you need to understand there's something far deeper going on than just putting on a new layer of clothes.
Sure. Yeah.
And it was just a weird, just kind of like, it's like a simple reminder, but it was just like a super powerful reminder. And then the other thing too, is just like seeing these guys that are in a Venezuelan prison, and, you know, we're playing, cause it was 2002 or 2003, you know, like, open the eyes of my heart, yeah, or something, yeah, of that nature. Yeah, yeah. and or we fall down,
uh-huh.
and we're
is that Cutlass?
Oh, stop it!
It's Chris Tomlin.
Chris Tomlin, man.
He was only 30 something then. Yeah, he's like 50 something now.
Okay,
but just seeing these guys who, for everything going in their life, if they were hopeless, you wouldn't blame them, but they were filled with hope. And so that was just that's one of those things I'll remember for a really, really, really long time.
That's great. Man, service trips, mission trips. I have been very, very, very fortunate in my life. I mean, I remember going to Mexico. Golly, it was maybe 10 years old or something like that. My dad was leading a group of students from Ozark Christian College, and I remember feeling like the stuff, like the best in the world, because I had a portable CD player, which was technology that the college students didn't even have because they were poor. And so they were jealous. And yes, Audio Adrenaline had just released a new CD that was popular at that point. But anyway, I remember at an early age just going to do one of those work projects and build a house, kind of a common one. Crossing the border to Mexico, right across the border, and just from an early age being exposed to some of the poverty that I didn't know existed. And then through the years, getting to go to other places, Guatemala, Mexico, Africa during college one time. And specifically in Africa one time, we didn't have access to, you know, any sort of running water. So if you want to take a shower, it's a bucket shower. You're kind of drenching a sponge over your head. And I remember the reverse culture shock coming back and going back to the dorms at Ozark and watching one guy brush his teeth. And this is what he did. He turned the water on and got his toothbrush wet and then just let the water run the entire time he brushed his teeth. And just having been a few weeks before that in a place where I was bucket showering, it just put things in perspective that I can't ever see the world the same again, kind of like your mm-hmm. Guatemala experience, like the prison experience. So, man, we're blessed. And I think serving others and crossing boundaries like that teaches us so much. So let's jump into the sermon, which was all about service and surrendered living and kind of giving up your rights. So, Adam, would you recap us for a couple of minutes here, just the sermon from yesterday? It was good stuff.
Yeah, no. So as we're wrapping up the series, you know, so you are here and just trying to answer that, like, really, really big question in life that you can't answer in a 30-minute, 35-minute sermon. Mm-hmm. But it's like, why am I here? You know, why am I where I am? What has God done? Why has He put me where I am? And so we're really just talking about what is our purpose, you know, and it's we're created to do good works. We're created for a purpose to do things for the Lord. He's prepared those things for us in advance, and just trying to remind us we're here for a reason, and reminding us, like, we're not a part of Corinth Christian Church by accident. It's not just because you know, you think that, you know, Josh and Adam and Luke just, you know, preach incredible messages and we're just delightfully charming and hilarious, right?
That's what my wife tells me every day.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
wakes up and says, "You are delightfully charming."
Yeah, absolutely. I wake up to that.
Now go take a shower and wash
that. That's right.
Wash the vomit off of you. You know, it's not just because we have incredible kids programming. It's not just because, you know, whatever, you know, you want to fill it in the blank. It's not just because your family has always attended here. It's because God's got us here for a reason. You know, we're going to go through valleys. We're going to help people through valleys. And then I think that the big idea of the message is just God's wanting to accomplish something bigger than any of us could ever dare to hope, dream, or imagine through what we're doing. And so just jumping into what does that look like? What are those, you know, He's prepared us to live a surrendered life. What does that look like? And there's all kinds of areas we could have gone, but we just kind of went to the big three of, you know, we're givers, we are servers, we're sharers. We're generous with our money. We're generous with our time. We're generous with, you know, our words. We're servant oriented people. We're not here to be served, but to serve. We are people who share our story. We're investing in our one, longing for them to come home to the Father. And so, so that's really kind of where we went. It's not rocket science by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know that we said anything new at all. But as I've been told many, many times, man needs to be reminded more than he needs to be instructed. And so sometimes we just need that. We need that big reminder.
Yep. That's really good stuff. I love the conclusion to the series. You are here, not just where we are, but where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place to end. Just God wants us to be servants and sharing not only our story, but his story and how his story is shared through us. So Luke, any big takeaway from you? Anything that jumped out that was really helpful?
Yeah, I think the whole thing just was kind of helpful as far as building a framework for what we're called to do. But up front, I think that was just a really encouraging word to me yesterday, that we are not here at Corinth by accident, that it's on purpose. And I know that for me, I like feel that. The story just really quickly of kind of how it came about. I interned in 2018. At a certain point, knew that I could be coming back here full time, and so I had gotten hired after that, and finishing up my senior year of college. I think it's about, I don't know when you did it, Josh, but like maybe it was April, maybe it was May. You, who was the youth minister before, gathered up all of the teenagers on Wednesday night and kind of told them that you were going to transition into a different role and that I'd be coming back out to be the youth minister. And the night that you did that at youth group was a night that I was traveling for Ozark with the admissions department and was preaching a sermon in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sermon all about like, hey, God's got a plan for you. You need to make sure that you're leaning into it and saying yes. And so I started to share my story of just how whenever I was a high school student, thought about ministry, wasn't really sure what to do about Bible college, but ended up at Ozark, wasn't really sure what, you know, life was going to look like beyond Ozark, but the Lord provides, and I'm going to go to this place. And it was literally at that moment that I'm sharing that story about how I'm excited to step into what the Lord has for me next, that all of the teenagers that you just told,
yeah, that's it. They
that I'm coming in. They already have my number from the summer before. I'm getting text message after text message after text message while I'm preaching, and I had my phone up like on the little pulpit for a timer, and so like I'm seeing these text messages come in, and that was just this like so surreal moment of the timing, and I had to finish that sermon, just sharing my story on the verge of tears because it was just this. Yeah. It was this moment in which God kind of solidified, I'm not going to this place by accident. And so, man, for me, I felt that personally as you're kind of just like going through, you're here for a reason. I believe that about all of our people. And too. So that was just really an encouraging moment from yesterday.
That's great. You know, one thing that I really appreciated was, and we try to put legs to the message and be as, just have as much application as possible. So when you say a surrendered life, it's like, well, your life is a big thing.
Yeah.
It's all of it. But I love the practicality of having three words: give, serve, share. You know, give your money. I mean, other things too, but specifically finances. Serve, maybe here at Corinth, or lean into a serve role, and then share your story. Just three verbs that really help us imagine how we can do that. So you started out, Adam, talking about just why are you here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the kind of the valleys we face, sometimes it's our valley, sometimes it's someone else's valley. It just got me thinking, have you all seen that? How have you seen that in your church days, your community days, of helping someone through a valley or being helped through your valley? And I know I kind of just sprung that question on you, so I'll actually start and give you guys time to think while I'm speaking. So for me, this is a story I've shared several times, but just I think the more I can share it, I think it's a good reminder no matter what. When Sasha and I were pregnant and then suffered a miscarriage, that was a valley for us. That was...
Mm-hmm.
what would it have been, the fall of 2014. So that was a valley for us. And so Luke, similar to you getting text messages from teenagers and things like that, I remember we found out on a Friday and just kind of took the weekend off after that, didn't come to church Sunday morning, just to spend some time together, just us. And just were overwhelmed with texts, with and Adam shared, I think, in some level. And so the church kind of knew what was going on. We were 13 weeks in, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, the youth group made all kinds of cards and notes and texts, and that was just really, really meaningful. And what we've seen since then is, I've shared that story several times, and a couple times from a sermon, and both times I've had people talk to me about how it helped them with what they were going through, and just gave them strength. And so that's the thing that jumps into my mind initially, is the valley kind of stuff, and being able to help someone else. So that hit home for me for sure. Anything strike for you?
Yeah, I remember, this is just a little one, my freshman year at Ozark. So I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. Ozark is in Joplin, Missouri. If you go through Dallas, which you have to, it's going to be about a 12-hour drive, mm-hmm. because of all the traffic. And so the amount of time that I got to go home was just very small, like Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so my birthday came around the spring semester. I just remember feeling like, man, this is my first birthday away from home. I haven't been home in a long time. I really miss my family. I really miss Mexican food that is good, all that sort of stuff. And so I just remember feeling kind of homesick at that point. And my friends Fox and Dusty, they knew it, and so they kind of wanted to do something encouraging to lift my spirits a little bit. And so I remember being so mad, Dusty. So they were like devising a plan to do something to my room for my birthday. And Dusty's job was to like distract and to buy time. And so we go out to do something. I don't remember what, but then I guess he got a text message that said, hey, you need to stall some more. Mm-hmm. So he's like, hey, real quick, I gotta stop by GameStop to get something. Would you mind if we stop by GameStop? I'm like, yeah, man, sure, whatever. I'm not really much of a gamer. And so the amount of time in a GameStop that I'm content spending is 5 minutes. Dusty was stalling, and so we spent like 50 minutes in a GameStop, and he was like reading video games, and he was showing me all these things, and he was playing the sample video games, and I'm like, all right, come on, dude, like, let's go. Well, he was just stalling, so we got back to the dorm and, you know, walked down to the room, opened up the room. There were about 100-200 silver and black balloons for the San Antonio Spurs.
Not the Oakland Raiders.
Not the Oakland or Las Vegas, as I made the mistake earlier
That's
in the
right,
podcast.
Yeah.
The Las Vegas Raiders. No, it was the San Antonio Spurs.
That's good.
And man, they were just cards and notes, and there were a couple of balloons full of shaving cream as well. But I did not pop those, so I didn't get the shaving cream all over me. But man, that was just, I remember, it was just a really small thing that a couple of friends, they identified something about how I was feeling, and then they did something about it. And that was just really, really encouraging to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. So I'll preface this with saying that this story has a happy ending. I know not all stories have those. But so my mom and dad are married now. But I remember it was about 2001 or two. It was 2002. My parents ended up divorcing. Mm-hmm. And they've been married for 27 years, something like that, almost 27 years. And I remember just getting that. And so I'm 22 years old, and it's just earth-shattering. I mean, that's yeah. world-breaking kind of stuff. And I'm sure many of the listeners know exactly what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And so I remember working through just the shock of it, talking to trusted mentors, and doing all the things that we do whenever we go through those times, because we don't want to live in isolation. And I wasn't the brightest bulb in the box even at at that point, but I had at least that knowledge of I can't handle this on my own. And so I remember, you know, just getting counsel and just people being there for me, listening to me. And but then I remember we had a Bible study at our house because I was a youth minister there in Joplin. And Josh, I don't even know if you were there that night or if you were skipping. But
Josh would never skip.
Josh would never skip. But so had a young girl in the youth group, and she was just acting odd, which wasn't necessarily weird that she was acting odd. she did that often. But I remember after the Bible study, I just went out to her, and she was just kind of off by herself. And I was like, "Yo, what's up?" And she said, "Well, I just found out my parents are getting a divorce, and I feel like it's my fault." And I was like, "Wow. Well, I'll tell you this. I just found out my parents are getting a divorce, and I think it's my fault. So, you know, we can kind of walk through this together." And so that was just kind of like one of those first moments of like, our pain, God never wastes a pain, even in the midst of it. I mean, that was fresh, man. I'm talking like literally a week.
Wow.
In between that, it's just like, holy moly. And I didn't know it at the time, but a quote that's kind of become fairly meaningful to me is from Henry Nouwen, and it's from his book, Wounded Healer, which is just fantastic. But he has this little quote in there. It says, "The great illusion of leadership is to think that man can be led out of the desert by someone who has never been there."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And it's like we go through our stuff, but we don't just go through our stuff to go through our stuff. It's for the purpose of there's always going to be a purpose of we can help somebody else. You know, in 2 Corinthians, you know, 1:4, you know, God who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort that we've received mm-hmm. from God. So we're comforted to be a comforting person, you know, kind of like we're blessed to be a blessing.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that for me, that's where my mind, you know, generally goes. And there's other things as well.
Yeah.
But for sure, that's one that always pops in mind.
The church is, you know, the body of Christ, and just nothing like it on planet Earth, where you can find cradle to grave, people to take care of you, to walk you through life, lessons, help. And that leads, you know, in a good way into kind of the outline, the give, serve, share,
yeah,
and how we all function in different ways, you know, as the body of Christ in different forms, but we all play a part. And if we don't do our part, then the body's going to be missing a part of the valuable work.
Yeah. Or it's just going to be weaker.
Yeah.
You know, you put it into, like physical training realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you can always tell guys who skip leg day.
Yep.
Me.
Or just skip every day. But
burn. It's not a burn if it's truthful.
but you know, you can always tell. It's like, you know, if you have an underdeveloped, you know, part of the body, because it's not being worked out. And so, yeah, everybody's got a role to play. Everybody's got a part to play. And so we're not, we're as a church, and the church in general is never operating at its highest capacity if everybody's not fulfilling their role.
Right. So let's jump in just to those three words. We'll just spend a few moments on each, but give. Adam, how did you first kind of see giving? Who taught you perhaps the value of giving? Or maybe a follow-up question is just what else would you like our people to hear?
Yeah.
A word on giving.
So I learned giving and specifically tithing at a very early age. I grew up in a Baptist church, and we did the children's sermon where all the kids came down. Yeah, that was kids' church in the church I went to. No cool stuff, you know, no cool Melissas or great videos or any of those things. It's just, hey, yeah, the preacher's going to sit down on the front step, and all the kids, you know, all 12 of us are going to go sit there, mm-hmm. and he's going to teach us a lesson. And somehow the dude, it felt like 52 weeks out of the year, he turned that lesson into a lesson on tithing.
Mm-hmm. Which was really like a backwards way of getting into the
parents' pockets. We want 10% of your $2 allowance.
Well, but the strategy is, it's like he knew that everybody paid more attention to that like 3-minute children's sermon than they did the 40 minutes that he was preaching. But so I learned that at a very early age, but I did not start practicing that until far too late in my life. And so that's why, you know, like the whole idea of tithing to me is just, it's just vitally important, because I know the difference that it made in my life, through just learning to practice, just faithful,
yeah.
God first, giving. It just, yeah. There's just something about it, guys. You know, whenever you're giving first, mm-hmm. It just kind of just puts some things, you know, I guess you could call it a keystone habit, you know, use some of our vocabulary before.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Luke, what do you say on giving?
Yeah. I learned from VBS, guys versus girls offerings.
there you go.
If the guys win, then the girl gets the pie in the face. If the boys win, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did get an email from Barna not too long ago, and it was highlighting just a question that they put on research. I thought this was so interesting, and if we're talking about surrendered living, I think it might be helpful. They asked a bunch of practicing Christians, so mm-hmm. throw that word in there, is practicing Christians, why do you choose to give? And so then they gave some options for multiple choice and said, I give because of who I am, I give because of why I'm asked, I give because of how I'm asked. I give because of the person asking or because of the ministry asking. And by far, the number one response at 69% came in, well, I give because of who I am, right? So your giving is not necessarily, well, I feel like God needs this, and so I'm going to do that, or I like the person or the church or the mission that's asking. I mean, sure, that's some of it. But like, if you want to be a generous person, it's actually just rooted in your identity as somebody who is living a surrendered life to Jesus. Yeah. And so just think that's huge. Is generosity, is that the person that you are,
right?
Because of how you've been transformed. If you can answer that question, yes, then the way that you're going to be generous and give is going to be radical, and it's going to bless the kingdom of God.
And there's obviously the financial component of it, and we need to be generous. We need to be givers with that. But there's also too, you know, just like the giving of our time to other people, giving our attention. I mean, we pay attention.
That's financial lingo, isn't it?
That's financial lingo. You know, we pay attention. Mm-hmm. And so it's just having that mindset of, I just want to be generous, open-handed, blessed mm-hmm. to be a blessing, you know.
Yeah. And really, tithing specifically has its roots way back in the Old Testament when, you know, God had freed his people from Egypt and all sorts of stuff and giving them laws to live by. And it's like Luke, what you said, it's who we are. And Adam, you've said this lots before, just God can do more with, 90% than we can with our 100%.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Not only with the money that we give, but he does something in us. So, you know, it's not just about the money that we give, it's about the section of our heart that we give, the trust shown to God by giving first.
Yeah, we've said for years, you know, there's like an invisible string between your heart and your wallet.
Yeah, that's right.
And so Jesus, that's straight from Jesus. You know, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be as well. And so it's giving is just it's a rhythm, it's a discipline, it's a spiritual act that is just telling your heart, here's where our allegiance and our loyalty lies.
Yeah. Well, serving was the second point. Give, serve, share. So serving, guys, what do you think it's important for our people here at Corinth to know about serving? Maybe here at Corinth specifically. And then anybody else? Oh, I love this question. Just who modeled service for you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the big thing is like everybody has a role to play.
Yeah. That's what I was going
to
say too.
Everybody's got a role to play. And one of our biggest discoveries that we make in our walk with Jesus is figuring out what has he gifted me? How has he gifted me? Figuring out what that role is. And we try to do our best to make sure that we're putting people into environments, you know, where they can kind of discover that. But it is kind of self-discovery as well, of just learning, here are some of the things, the giftings, you know, that Jesus has given me. How can I use this for the kingdom of God? And that's just the question that dominates our mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I would add this to, this is maybe more of a boldish statement than it needs to be, but I would maybe say this. There is not a point in your life where you look more like Jesus than whenever you are serving somebody selflessly. Because that's what Jesus did.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if like we're seeking surrendered living and transformation into Christlikeness, then service, like if that's your goal, service has got to be a part of that. You've mm-hmm. got to make yourself less and himself great. Mm-hmm. And that's whenever the Spirit comes in with some transforming power of transformation in your life. It is that important.
Yeah. And it's here at the church, it's at home, it's at work. I mean, it's at the ball field. I mean, this is just it's surrendered living. It's not, it's not the surrendered hour.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the surrendered living. This is what, I think we've used it as bottom line before. You know, it's like, what is it? Serving isn't what I do. A servant is who I am.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, we were doing a Q&A series with the teenagers recently, and on one of the nights with the middle schoolers, one of the questions that came in was just like, how can I serve? And I think that they were just like specifically asking, here at Corinth, like, what can I do as a middle schooler? Great. Well, we want you to serve too. But I took that and just was like, okay, well, I go to the school every day now to pick up a CLC class, and I usually just kind of walk into the hallway and greet them there as they're walking up to, before we load up in the van to come back to the church. And so at youth middle school, they've got 4 minutes mm-hmm. to get from one class to the next. And so they aren't allowed to, like, they don't have enough time to stop at their lockers to like drop stuff off and all that sort of stuff. And they're not allowed to carry backpacks. Mm-hmm. And so all of these like tiny, scrawny little middle schoolers are like carrying 3 binders and 4 notebooks. And if they want to stay hydrated, a water bottle and all that sort of stuff. And it is hilarious to watch. But, one of the things that just I've noticed about something that happens at the school, people drop their stuff all the time. And I have watched
poor Chromebooks.
Yeah. No kidding. I have watched time and time and time again, a student drop their stuff and then like people just like step right over it. No consideration for oh, well, that person might need some help. And mm-hmm. I was just telling our middle school students, like, you want to serve, be the person that stops and helps somebody like that. You know, it's you've got to just do the thing, the right thing, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Man, service, if it's applied at Corinth, I would just add this. There are more things to do than you probably think there are to do. And there are more things to do than we have even thought to do. And we're trying all the time to expand the roles for people to do. And one thing we always tell people when we do the changemaker session of Next Steps and tour the building and show people all the spaces, over and over and over, we just say, there are all sorts of different, I mean, levels isn't really the right term, but there's different varieties of work. You know, you can be an upfront person, you can be a behind the scenes person, you can mm-hmm. be a weekday person, you can be a Sunday morning person, in all these different roles to really drive the engine of what Corinth Christian Church is, and all of them are so important. You know, we all have different gifts, but we all have a gift to use. So
right. Yep.
Yeah, so let's jump in. Finally, share. That might be some new possibly lingo for this kind of surrendered living stuff. So Adam, explain a little, remind us from yesterday, rather, what the share kind of component looks like and how we can do that with our lives and our stories.
Yeah, and I think that's really what we're talking about. So give, we're looking at, the financial component, serve, we're looking at, how do we use our gifts and our abilities. But share is, you have a story. Every single one of us has a story, and how can we use our story to help influence others for the kingdom of God? Maybe that is like what we did just a second ago. It's sharing your story of how whenever you were in a valley, here's how God comforted me. Here's sure. what God did for me. Yeah. Hopefully this will help you. It can be simply sharing the story of something that God has been teaching you. Recently, maybe you've in your reflective rhythm that you're doing, maybe something just kind of occurred to you and it's like, oh my goodness, that was really helpful to me. So maybe I should share that with somebody. And it's like, wow, had you ever considered that? And then, you just share that up. But I think the big driver that we were hitting on yesterday was, what is your story? Somebody introduced you into Christ, introduced you to Christ. How can you use your story to introduce somebody else to Christ?
Yeah,
that's really what it comes down to. And we don't overcomplicate it. We keep it simple. who were you before you met Jesus? Who are you now?
Yeah, I love that John 9 story.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? I don't know.
Yeah.
What I do know is I was blind, but now I see, and Jesus did it.
Yeah, they're like, they want to do some theological debate,
yeah.
And he's like, yo, dude, I don't know. Yeah. You guys can sit over there, and you can talk about that all you want, but here's what I know. I was blind. Now I'm not blind. He's the guy that did it, so that kind of is important to me.
Yeah.
You know, and so for somebody, you know, maybe out there listening, it's like, you know, here's what I know. Before Jesus, I was an addict, met Jesus, now I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, before Jesus, I was a selfish, arrogant jerk, met Jesus, now I am less selfish, less of a jerk. But, you know, it's just like, that, you can, you know, the questions and all those things that people have, I'm not saying the questions aren't legitimate or that they don't need to be explored, but the thing at the end of the day is, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
How has Jesus made a difference in your life? And just learn to articulate that. And we're not talking like, you don't need a 30-minute story.
Nope.
Yo, I mean, we're right. talking like,
nope.
Can you get it down to 45 seconds?
Well, so I'll even go lower than that. I was just talking with someone Monday. They do some training for kind of personal evangelism and all that kind of stuff. And they said, we actually train people to tell their story, like a 5-minute version, but we actually train them to tell their story in 15 seconds.
There you go.
So that's kind of a challenge there. Just
I was blind, now I'm not.
And Jesus did it.
And Jesus did it.
Jesus did it, right?
Yeah.
So it always connects to his story, but 15 seconds, so you don't have to have all the theology. You don't even have to, I mean, Bible verses should always come at some point, and you should know the Bible, but this is someone, even if you have recently become a Christian, and you don't know all the references, don't feel some pressure.
Yeah.
Those will come in time, but your story is what Jesus has done. So 15 seconds, it's an elevator pitch, right?
Yeah.
And you can do that.
Because, bro, like, how many times, like, have you, like, I know this for me. I won't throw you guys. But, like, there are so many times I'm talking with someone, and, like, a verse will come to mind. And so I'll share the verse with them, and I'll be like, but I have no idea where that was.
Right.
It's like, I know it's in there. I know it's in there. I'm not making this up. This is not God helps those who helps themselves for cleanliness or
right.
godliness.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I can't remember book, chapter, verse on this. Paul wrote it. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's just like, yeah, exactly. Can you tell your story? Can you tell your story?
Mm-hmm.
And that there's something so powerful about that. And I think what too many of us do is we just underestimate the power of our personal story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have a story that highlights God's amazing grace, his power in us. And it doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be, you know, crazy or anything like that. It's just got to be true. That's the only thing.
Here's an encouragement to the listeners who you think, I don't have a story. Some people might have that dramatic transition moment or the conversion moment, rather, where it's like, I was blind. I was a complete train wreck, but Jesus saved me. But some of you out there, you don't know what it's like to not be a Christian or at least be in church. You were, you know, born in the baptistry. First meal was communion, as we say sometimes. What I have found helpful, because that was kind of me. I was always in a Christian household. Never really had a big rebellious stage or anything like that. But what I have found is I ask myself, who would I be without Jesus? And it is super scary.
It's good.
And who am I with Jesus? And so it's not necessarily before and after, but it's who am I without him? When I have gone down sinful habits or even seasons, it's who was I without Jesus in that time?
Mm-hmm.
And who am I with him? So
that's great. Yeah,
that's a really good question. I want to speak to that real quick too, Josh, because that's my story as well. Mm-hmm. Grew up in the church and for the most part was never incredibly rebellious. But just kind of always understood who Jesus was, what he did for me. And when I got to Bible college, I'm living in dorms with and going to classes with and hearing stories of guys my age who have experienced a radical transformation by the power of the gospel. And I remember like hearing, you know, all of these stories. I was hearing a ton of I was blind, but now I see stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, almost becoming envious.
Sure.
I was like thinking, wow, you've got this incredible story that's going to preach and be powerful. And you're going to use your story to to call people to Christ. And that's awesome. And I was like envious of that because I desired so much to be able to make an impact, but I just didn't think my story had mm-hmm. the pizzazz for it. Right. And so I was really wrestling with that and struggling with that. And, unfortunately, like occasional times started to like exaggerate some of my own story so that I could right. be, you know, cause yeah, you know, all that sure. sort of stuff. Yeah. And that was a sin, that just kind of hurt me and others more. And so I remember finally just kind of like confessing to a professor and being vulnerable that this was something I was struggling with. And he was like, "Well, hold on, Luke, like you grew up in the church. You were a good Christian kid. Like, why are you apologizing for that story?
Exactly.
You have the story that I prayed every day my kids would have."
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was like, that changed things for me. And so then, Josh, that is the very exact question that you just asked. I was like, who would I be without Jesus?
Yeah.
Is a question that I started to ask myself as well. And the answer is not pretty.
Yeah,
I would probably be homeless right now because without Jesus, I really wanted to be a comedian. And I am not funny enough to be a comedian, so I would have gotten no gigs, would have had no money, and I'd be out on the street somewhere. And where I'm at now is better than that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, so. And I've always thought the stories of people who were in you know, brought up in the church, stayed faithful, never had that "I'm going to go build a testimony" period of their life. Those to me are just as inspiring.
Yeah,
because. Yeah. I think sometimes people look at the Christian life and they're like, "Man, is this even possible?" And it's like, well, outside of the power of the Holy Spirit, no. But the Holy Spirit is very powerful and can guide us even from a young age all the way through our years. And so it's just like I said, to me, it's just as inspiring as the guy that's like, "Yeah, I was, you know, living out of the back of my truck. I was eating cockroaches that had been found in a, you know, shed that had been cleaned out by
John the Baptist down to cockroaches."
But, you know, and it's like, and then I met Jesus and now here I am, blah, 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 right. blah. It's like, that's inspiring, but it's also inspiring. You know, I think the big point is like every story is inspiring.
Right.
Because it's your story.
Correct.
And so your story has power. That's what I would just say.
Yeah,
so share
really,
it.
That's really good. Your story. Just to say that again, your story has power, no doubt about it. So I think the bottom line is just tell it, you know, find a way to share it, whether it's 5 minutes or 15 seconds, or if God gives you the opportunity to speak it in a longer, you know, testimonial part sometime, then tell it there. But share your story. So bottom line yesterday, just phenomenal, successful life is a surrendered life. So loved that. So let's just do one more question. What's maybe a one leadership challenge as it pertains to the sermon then for what we need to do to live that successful life? What would you guys say? Luke?
Good question. Come back to me.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. So we've got the give, serve, share thing. In an ideal world, you would do some self-evaluation and say, all right, which one of these is lagging? Let's pick that one up. In a not ideal world, you know, it would be pick one and let's add this. But it's it's take that next step.
Yep.
Somebody else, it may be, and maybe you've been at Corinth for like 20 years and you're listening to this podcast, go to Changemaker.
Sure.
You know, that's a part of our next steps process. Just like, hey, it's not just for new folks. It's just like, hey, I want to figure out how I can make a difference and just jump in and go. And Josh and team will, you know, help you understand kind of what some of the opportunities are. And so that'd be for me.
Yeah. Here's a challenge I have. I would say, you know, one of the things we do talk about in Changemaker is just your shape. You know, it's an acronym. So your spiritual gifts, your personality, your heart, your abilities, your personality, and your experiences. So what you can do is just think through that, or you can actually go online, maybe take the inventory and kind of see where some of your skills are. So that would be one challenge. Another one, just I keep going back to this share thing. I think sometimes the reason we don't share our story is just because we don't have a plan to.
Haven't articulated it, too.
You haven't articulated it, and you also don't have a plan. So whether it's, you know, serving a neighbor, maybe you don't know their names yet, like, make a plan. It's okay for people to be people. It was people sometimes just give a bad rap of they're people, not projects. Well, hold on. Like, they can be both. Like we can have enough love for someone to prioritize a conversation with our neighbor. Like we don't have to call them a project, but they are Luke, what you said, just like Guatemala, they're a person that God created. So prioritize some sort of plan to share your life or serve maybe a neighbor or something like that to tell your story.
Yeah. I think, Josh, what I hear you saying in a roundabout way is just that word that we've said on the podcast quite a few times is just intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I think about the word leadership, I think about the word intentionality. And so here's what I might just throw in. You have to be intentional with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've been around Corinth for a minute, you've heard us use like the language of the one,
mm-hmm.
right? So like you need to have a one, praying for your one, inviting your one, sharing your story with your one, all that sort of stuff. That doesn't happen by accident. You've got to be intentional with it.
Yep.
And so, I've got one, and this Saturday morning, I'm playing disc golf with him.
Awesome.
And I think it's just him and I. And so if you've ever sat, heard a story of a preacher sitting next to someone on an airplane, that's
this
just
is your airplane.
That's just 2 hours. Like disc golf, man, like we're going 18 holes together, maybe even 27 because we're playing at a course that has 27. So,
nice.
There's that intentional opportunity, that I've got to just kind of think through, okay, how does my story speak to him? And how can I share it? Where's the right opportunity? And so there's some intentionality in the leadership part of things here that you've got to make sure you get right.
Yeah, man, that's so good. The challenge yesterday, just take a next step, take your next step. And I think the hardest part is just the first step of that, but you get out there and do it and see what God can do. Let's talk just for a few minutes about some leadership stuff, because I think part of our jobs as leaders, whether it is a parent in the house, a employer, a boss with employees, or a coach with a team, is to obviously serve them, but also train them to be servants. And so how do you balance the tension of serving your people, but also training them to live this out? Because you don't want to just give them everything. Part of your job is to train them up, right? Does that question make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Well?
I think the first thing is you just have to demonstrate it. Like that's number one, right? So
sure. If
you are not demonstrating to your people what service looks like, then they're not going to pick up on what service looks like, and then they're not going to serve. So that's the first thing right off the bat that comes to mind is you have to be able to demonstrate it for sure.
Yeah. And in that, so if you use the old model, I do, you watch, you do, or we do together. You do, I watch. Now you go do.
Yeah.
I think that's probably kind of that model there, and that goes over everything. I mean, whether it's showing somebody how to edit a video, whether it's teaching someone how to give a presentation, whether it's teaching a baseball swing, golf swing, all those things. I think that's. I mean, it's old. And the reason it's tried and true is because it's tried and true.
Because it works.
Because it works.
Yeah, I even think about just like car mechanics. Like, my dad, we always tried to fix our own cars and he would always show, and then we would do it together.
Yeah,
and then
it's a good...
I would try to do it. And so now I'm at the point where he lives in San Antonio. I'm down the, not down the street. And so there have been a couple of car issues I've had. And my first thought is, can I do this myself?
Yeah.
Can I actually do this? And there've been a couple of times where I've been able to, because somebody, my dad, gave me the training that I needed to do it. So yeah, that model.
Yeah, I think that model, it really comes back to that. That's kind of that's the magic there is, I think having a plan, telling them what the plan is, but my mind kind of goes to coaching and also parenting. That's the stage we're in. So even just here's a super practical, real example. The other day, my daughter wanted to cut the strawberries. So I just handed her a knife and said, go for it.
Right.
Not really. I coached her through it very, very carefully. I said, all right, here's what you want to do. And you got to make sure your fingers are out of the way. And same thing. We were right there together. But then I was kind of watching her do it and things like that. And I think the temptation for me is – we kind of talked about this in a podcast before, or in a sermon before, at least. Luke, you said it, if you want a job done right, you have to do it yourself. And that's just not true.
That's a leadership myth.
It's a leadership myth. And so we're not going to do that. So I think we have to be patient, because sometimes the process takes longer than you want it to take. But bottom line for me is, if we're going to be the parents and leaders that God calls us to be, we do need to train our people to be servants. And so, man, manage that tension well of serving them, setting an example, just like you said, Luke, but also training them to be servants themselves. So, hey, we need to wrap up here. We're about at an hour. So, Adam, yesterday you asked some questions, like really deep meaning of life sort of questions. So we're going to end today with some really deep questions. All right, you guys ready?
All right.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one quality or ability, what would it be?
Oh, gosh.
Wake up tomorrow with one quality.
One new quality, one new ability, one new skill. What is it?
Oh, wow.
I think I'll go a spiritual-ish realm.
Oh, gosh.
I think I'm really bad at empathy. Like, really, really bad at it.
Yeah.
I would love to wake up tomorrow and be able to just have empathy for people.
Yeah.
Okay. I can somewhat be sympathetic, even then I struggle a little bit, but
yeah.
But I think I do empathy. If we're going the non-spiritual route, I want to fly, man. Like, I want to
yeah, so superpower. So yeah. You're going superpowers or something like that. So yeah. If we're staying in like the realm
natural
of what
skill,
is
yeah.
a natural skill, then it would be to know exactly what distance I'm hitting my irons.
Okay,
and,
there you go.
And to have no more fat or thin shots.
Okay,
that's not bad. I could go to the disc golf world too. Like I would hope to have the ability to consistently make 33-foot or less putts.
Okay,
because if I can do that, then I might be able to move up one division.
Okay,
which means nothing. Yeah, no. But
here's,
still,
here's the skill I would instantly have. I would want to be able to know how to fix anything mechanical without ever looking at a YouTube video, without ever looking at a manual. Just look at it and figure it out, because I am super jealous of those people that can do it. Because I'm the guy, I'm like, I'll figure it out, but it's going to be a long time on YouTube sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have 8 bolts left over.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Here's another one. If you can only have one app on your phone, not the standard that it comes with, like text or call or whatever, but one app that you have to download, you only get one.
Oh, wow.
What is it?
Let me see. Let me look at my phone.
YouVersion. No.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Spiritual route again.
The YouVersion, I don't use YouVersion at all. I prefer the paper.
You hate it when,
I love,
don't you hate it when it comes up and says, do you love the Bible
I was
app?
Just
and I feel so bad when I say no.
No.
I don't want to do the survey.
No, I don't love the Bible app. So
I think you can hit yes that you do, and then it'll ask you, do you want to do a survey?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So you can say you love it and then just say, but no, I don't want to rate it.
There you go.
So I think for me, it'd be a podcast app.
Okay.
That's probably pretty low hanging.
I think that would come standard, right? The Apple Podcast?
Well, which
on your iPhone?
Podcast
I use the Overcast app because it's got a thing to where it fills in, like it can take a podcast where it's got a bunch of blank space in it and it shortens it down, so you're supposed to be able to listen to. It's got like, it's a great app. I'll just stop.
But like it takes out the commercials and stuff?
It doesn't take out the commercials, but it'll play it's got some sort of technology to where it can say, okay, this podcast should be played at 1.25 speed.
Oh, I see. Okay. Sure.
You know, but this one should be played at 1.1.
I was similar. And I said Audible. So I like listening to some audiobooks, when I drive or things like that. So that's a downloaded app for me. And that's what I'd
pick. If you don't let me use the podcast app, I'd say it's my budget app.
Your budget app.
Okay.
Okay. UDisc.
There you go.
Not surprising there. It's the best app for disc golf. It has all of the courses in the world listed on it, so you can just pull up the map, know which one you're going to.
18 birdies is that for golf.
You keep score on it. It's compatible with the watch, so you can just like log your score there. That is I use that app very, very often. I think that's the one. I'll download that.
Final question. We'll be done after this. If you only could eat one category of meals, like breakfast foods, lunch foods, or dinner foods for the rest of your life, what is it?
Dinner foods.
Dinner foods.
Yeah, because I feel like dinner foods, like you can, that's versatile enough to be able to handle some lunch, and maybe versatile enough to be able to handle some breakfast if you're crazy, you know?
Yeah, so I know we're not doing hot takes, but so here's a bit of a hot take. breakfast food is overrated.
I agree.
Yeah,
I do.
See, breakfast is what I'm choosing because I love breakfast so much.
I would rather do dinner. Give me burgers. Yeah. Give me fried chicken.
Well, see, the thing is that there's more variety in that realm than there is breakfast. Like, breakfast has a lot of variety for sure, but at a certain point, it's like, how many different ways can we use eggs?
Exactly. Eggs and flour and sugar.
Yeah. Eggs, flour, sugar. We're going to put it in a taco, which is delicious.
Yeah.
We're going to scramble them up, fry them up, poach them up. But it's like at a certain point, I want some French fries.
Yeah.
Like, stop feeding me eggs, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I think I'd go dinner.
Well, we can agree to disagree. Breakfast is amazing. I like some biscuits and gravy.
I don't think that Adam and I are saying breakfast is not awesome. Like, it's
fine.
Good.
I hear you. Yeah.
But we do. I don't know. I agree. I think it's overrated.
Wow. I share a food take with Luke.
Wow.
So that
we need to end
episode
right now.
Episode 8.
Yeah. The day the podcast died.
Yep.
All right. Hey, we want to say thank you once again for tuning in, for listening, for making this a part of your weekly rhythm. We hope it's been helpful and fun. And man, we can't wait to see you back at church next week. We're starting a brand new series through the book of Colossians, so it's going to be great to dive into the scriptures that way. And then we'll be back right here, Corinth in your car, Monday morning after that. So we hope to see you there. If you guys don't have anything else, then we're good. We love you. We like you and can't wait to see you.